This is an ABC Radio National podcast. For full details, abc.net.au/rn.
Well, nuclear is the word of the moment. Sales of our uranium to China, prospects of an energy source in the face of climate change, new technology to make the process safer, waste disposal for Australia to bury the world's radioactive leftovers. We've had all that and more in our programs and newspapers. And there's more to come. This week, a medical scientist who became a senator and is now back in Adelaide. Dr. John Coulter is Vice President of Sustainable Population Australia.
An Occam's razor late last year urged Australia to embrace nuclear energy and suggested that we could make a large amount of money by becoming the repository for the world's nuclear waste. The dangers of nuclear power were gravely misrepresented. For example, it was asserted that the Chernobyl disaster killed only 31 people and less than 100 deaths have been clearly linked to the explosion in 1986. But John Goffman, Professor of Medical Physics at Berkeley, a well-recognised world expert in both the physics and biology of radiation, has calculated that 950,000 people will have got or will get cancer as a result of the Chernobyl fallout, and roughly half will die of their cancers. The claim that only 31 deaths occurred deliberately hides behind the impossibility of identifying the exact cause of particular cancers and the statistical impossibility of identifying a proportionately small change in a large background of spontaneous cancers. Let me explain. In most populations, about 25 to 30% will get a spontaneous cancer at some time in their lives. Radiation increases the amount of genetic damage in an exposed population, and some of this damage leads on to cancer, the amount of cancer being proportional to the dose of radiation. Small exposures will cause only a low incidence of cancer in the exposed population, and no cancer caused by radiation exposure is distinguishable from a cancer that may have arisen spontaneously. Therefore, we can never say that a particular cancer was caused by radiation. Only when enough people are exposed to large enough doses can we say that the increased number of cancers in the exposed population is more than we would expect from chance variation alone. We may then say that the exposure has increased the cancer rate by a certain percentage. The maths is the work of epidemiologists and statisticians. Let me illustrate this point. If we toss a coin 100 times, we don't expect it'll come down exactly 50 heads and 50 tails. Suppose we get 45 heads and 55 tails. Is the coin dodgy? Well, it might be, but a statistician couldn't say. We expect this amount of variation too frequently to be sure. To be reasonably sure that the variation from the expected value is not due to chance, statisticians and medical epidemiologists ask that there be less than a 5% probability that the outcome could be due to chance alone. Similarly, we don't expect the cancer rate across Northern Europe to be the same every year. Natural fluctuations occur. The Chernobyl explosion sent a radioactive plume across Northern Europe as far as the Atlantic coast of Ireland. The exposed population numbered in the hundreds of millions. It's easy to show that quite large numbers of additional cancers could occur without these cancers reaching a statistical significance, just as the 45 heads and 55 tails may be due to a dodgy coin, but the maths can't prove it. How then might we calculate the cancers caused by the Chernobyl fallout? We do it by knowing the amount of radiation to which individuals or groups were exposed, the number of people so exposed, and by extrapolation from known dose-response relationships. The additional risk for a given individual may be extremely small, but when large numbers are exposed, the absolute number of additional cancers can be quite large, and that number may be quite undetectable by any epidemiological examination of the exposed population. Suppose in round figures the population of Northern Europe at the time of Chernobyl was 300 million. We would expect about 75 million of these people to get cancer spontaneously at some stage in their lives. Suppose an additional 1 million got cancer as a result of Chernobyl fallout. This is the variation that one would expect almost 20% of the time by chance alone, so this number would remain undetected as a consequence of exposure. It's on the basis of this more careful and informed analysis that Professor Goffman of Berkeley has calculated that 950,000 people will have got or will get cancer as a result of the Chernobyl fallout, and that roughly half will die of their cancers. Only a short time before Chernobyl blew its top, the Deputy Director General of Nuclear Safety with the International Atomic Energy Agency, Mr. B.A. Semenov, described the Chernobyl-type reactor in the bulletin of the IAEA, and he said, "The design feature of having more than 1,000 individual primary circuits increases the safety of the reactor system. A serious loss of coolant accident is practically impossible. This is the body we rely on to guarantee nuclear safety." Last year's Occam's Razor also claimed that Australia possesses three characteristics that make it ideal as a site for the world's nuclear waste: geological stability, extensive areas of dry climate, and political stability. This, it was said, placed a responsibility upon us to take the waste, and by the way, we could make a lot of money out of it. Australia is geologically stable, but claims in regard to the other two factors take little account of the timescale through which this material must be safely stored. The world is entering a period of rapid climate change as a consequence of greenhouse warming. We may speculate on rainfall distribution 100 or 500 years from now, but is it brave or foolish to store the world's nuclear waste based on our speculations? Political stability. We're looking to the care of this material for at least 1,000 years. Who, looking back over the turbulent ups and downs of nations and regions over the last 1,000 years, would confidently predict a politically stable Australia for the next millennium? Who in Russia only 20 years ago would have predicted the economic collapse of that nation to the point that it's now incapable of caring for a number of rusting nuclear facilities scattered widely across its vast expanse? The inherent dangers associated with nuclear power demand an extremely high level of security and vigilance that may prove impossible to maintain. There's compelling evidence that the peaking of oil presages a near future of considerable international unrest, conflict, and economic decline, a future in which it is most unwise to mix an expansion of things nuclear with the associated risks of nuclear weapons and terrorism. And by the way, do we get paid up front for the cost of 1,000 years of safe storage? Or are we prepared to take a deposit and a yearly instalment? And what do we do if a nation defaults on its payments? Do we send the waste back? Where does Australia invest a 1,000-year deposit so that the cost of looking after the waste can still be met 900 years from now? Those who assert that civil nuclear power can be totally divorced from the military and criminal use of nuclear material are asking us to forget history. The first reactors were built specifically to produce the materials for the first atomic bombs and only later became suppliers of electricity. The bombs exploded at Maralinga were fashioned from material made in a reactor that went on to become a power reactor on the UK electricity grid. Much of nuclear knowledge and technology is common to both power generation and the making of weapons. The Non-Proliferation Treaty has proved quite incapable of ensuring that nuclear fuels and facilities are not misused. The Iraq War was started over a claim that that nation possessed nuclear weapons. The IAEA and the NPT could not provide an assurance that this was not the case. The suggestion that nuclear power can be a solution to our energy needs arises in a business-as-usual view of the world in which all problems have technical solutions. Experience has shown that each round of technical solutions brings more intractable problems in its wake. Such an approach to problems is also predicated on confidence that even if we don't find solutions in our lifetime, problems can be left and solutions will be found by our descendants. But this technical problem, technical solution view of the world ignores some fundamental realities. It's piecemeal. Seeking solutions within this paradigm requires that we simplify the nature of the problem and deliberately ignore many contextual factors. Problem? Using coal, gas and oil to produce electricity leads to greenhouse-induced climate change. Solution, build nuclear power stations. Or here I might equally insert photovoltaic or wind generators. But the wider context reveals that greenhouse-induced climate change is only one among a large number of indicators that humans are living unsustainably. Excessive energy use, including electricity, is one of the important drivers of this unsustainability. More energy for human abuse can only accelerate the descent into an even less sustainable future for our children. The more comprehensive context of unsustainability is this. Over the last 180 years, humans have exponentially exploited cheap, non-renewable fossil fuels. We have used that temporary energy bounty to build a global human population from about 1 billion to over 6 billion. We now face a time when that cheap energy is not going to be available, and none of the vaunted alternative sources can fill the gap. A very basic example. It's been said that modern industrial agriculture is the process of using soil to turn oil into food. Global food supply is less than 1% as energy efficient as our gatherer-hunter forebears. The 99% energy subsidy comes overwhelmingly from oil, and we're now passing through the peak of oil production. In only a few years, oil production will fall ever more steeply while demand will remain high. The cost of petroleum and all the products we now derive from it will rise more and more steeply. Very large numbers will starve, economies will collapse. There'll be greatly increased intra and international tension and strife, of which the present Iraq war is but a gentle prelude. Not only can nuclear energy not replace oil and its many vital services, such as fertilisers to grow crops in Australia's poor soils, it adds an additional danger into this increasingly turbulent mix. Too many people are each demanding, on average, too much from the natural environment. Our primary efforts should not be directed toward technical fixes for a fundamentally unsustainable way of life. Our work must be directed towards stopping population growth as rapidly as possible and doing all in our power to reorganise our lives, our social, institutional and economic arrangements so that our demand for energy from all sources is drastically curtailed. We have only a few short years of relatively cheap energy left. We should use this small window of opportunity to make this transition. If we fail, we will have lost the opportunity. Then nature will do the job for us.
And do the job in ways we might not relish, is the implication. Dr. John Coulter spent 21 years in medical research, then became a Democratic senator in Canberra. Now he's Vice President of Sustainable Population Australia. Next week, Occam's Razor goes to the countryside. I'm Robin Williams.
ABC Radio National. More than 60 programs, more than 260 transmitters Australia-wide. And we're live on the net, as well as media on demand streams. Find out how to get more out of Radio National. Go to abc.net.au/rn. And for the full list of MP3 and podcast programs, abc.net.au/rn/podcast.